There's so much ignorance that surrounds spiritual practice. It comes from, I think, thousands and thousands of years of misunderstanding. And there's no easy way to change people and to bring them into greater understanding. It's an accumulated knowledge that mostly comes from experience. And most of the experience is having ignorance fall away. What you understand over the course of a spiritual life is most of what you thought it was is not true. In a certain sense, everything you thought it was represents a kind of crystallized idea that all by itself, as crystallized, cannot be true, because there's nothing about spiritual practice that is crystallized. There's nothing you can hold on to, any idea, thought, concept that will get it, because it is such a fluid truth that the idea that you have it automatically discounts it. Once you have the secret of spiritual truth, you have to discount it. Because that which is true in this moment is not necessarily true in the next moment. Not that there probably aren't deep, deep, deep spiritual truths that cut across all time frame, that goes from the top to the bottom of spiritual awareness. But even that will be a living truth. And as a living truth, it can't be grasped. It can't be held on to. It cannot be codified. It cannot be ritualized. It simply is something that arises in the moment over and over and over as a kind of endless statement of what is. But the minute you take what is in this moment and lock it in, you're wrong. Because the truth that happens in this class will not apply to the class a day from now, an hour from now, or even 2 seconds from now. It can't happen. The only truth that matters is the one that is arising now. We live in a society in which many of the truths that govern our society were established thousands of years ago. So we're not only in many ways culturally holding on to past ideas, we're holding on to ideas that are almost ancient. And those ideas have become weighted down with historical dimension, which means that people have fought and died for ideas and have therefore made them all the more important. Because once someone has died, or family members have died, or fought for these ideas, they become invested with that kind of emotionalism, and that emotionalism makes them very hard to break down. You see it in patriotism and nationalism, you see it in religious belief, that this particular teaching is the way, period. This particular idea is the truth, period. And once you're in that state, the truth of the moment finds it very hard to emerge. And so when you deal with trying to bring the spirituality of this moment into a life that is locked into belief systems that are thousands of years old, you are fighting against a structure that is so powerful that it is almost impossible to break it down. Not impossible, but almost impossible. Because what happens for many people is the very structure of their belief system becomes a kind of prison. It becomes unbearable. Something isn't working in it. Something isn't alive in it. We start to live within the deadness of our belief system. It gets challenged by our suffering. It gets challenged by our sense of experience in the world. And we go, this doesn't work. And then people will tell you, well, you're not doing it right, or you're not doing it hard enough, or deeply enough, or truly enough. And then you feel you're wrong. And then you don't know what's right or what's wrong. And that all of that stuff starts to get into your blood, and you start to feel really, really lost. For some people, being lost in that way lasts a very long time. For other people, it is the very thing that brings them to the truth. Where you say, I can't do this anymore, I give up. At which point, something awakens within you that is the truth. It simply shines forth. And then you have to deal with years and years of your own mind analyzing and debating the truth. Because the mind will come up and say, well, is that really the truth, or is that not the truth? Or is just because I felt it and I believed it in that moment, is it true in the next moment? And then you experience what Rudy called the mind destroying the soul. The mind comes in and attacks and decimates the very truth that just simply appears in your life. Holding on to the truth is something Rudy described as a muscle. You experience this extraordinary state of knowing, and sometimes it doesn't last more than a few seconds, but often it lasts longer. And you go, oh. And then the mind comes in to do its due diligence. Is this really the truth? Is this not the truth? And you get lost. You get lost in that. But if you go and you see the mind coming and starting to do its thing, and you just go, and the way I describe it best is, shh, shh, quiet, quiet. And then you fall back into that place of truth. And you watch from that place very easily the things that are coming to bring it, take it apart. And you simply relax into the truth, and nothing can touch it. It's when you start to put up the barrier to protect the truth, the very putting up of that barrier takes you out of it. It's not to fight the things that are coming at you, it's to surrender and absorb everything. And the deeper you surrender, the more anything that comes up doesn't matter. It simply doesn't matter. Because the truth is so central and beautiful and real and immediate and true that nothing in you wants anything but it. Rudy used to describe it as truth is almost like sex or orgasm. When you are in the midst of sex and orgasm, the neighbor bounding on the wall upstairs and the kid crying in the other room and all this other stuff, it doesn't matter. You are going to stay in that space because it is so powerfully wonderful and delicious. The truth is the same thing. The truth has that kind of, I don't want to leave this quality. It is so sensually and spiritually alive that residing in it becomes all that you want to do. And holding on to the truth really is a kind of powerful letting go and relaxation into that space. When you are living a life of deep rigidity, when you're locked in, this is how it should be, this is how it must be, this is how I was taught it was supposed to be, when you're living in that condition in the world, truth is very hard to come by. And I think it's really possible to go through a whole lifetime without touching it. Or missing it when it occurs. Simply not grasping that that was it. Or discounting it like that. Ah. I mean, it felt right in the moment, but not important. But when you stumble upon it, or when it comes into your life, or when you arrive at it because of a deep need and desire, the arrival at truth, or the arrival at this state of profound surrender, doesn't, because you've arrived there, automatically stick in your life. In the beginning, it's ephemeral. It comes and it goes. And when it goes, there's a great sense of loss. There's a great sense of, I had it. I had it. For 2 days I was living in it. And now it's gone. And, oh, it's so terrible. But that seems to be the nature of truth. It appears and it disappears. And part of the lesson of its appearance and disappearance is to accept that. Oh, now I'm living in untruth, or I'm living in distraction, or I'm living in my mind, or I'm living in obscurity again. The mere fact of that awareness is part of the mechanism that allows truth to emerge even more deeply and for longer periods of time. You start to realize that whatever is occurring in the moment is part of the truth, whether you know it or not. It is what is. And as you start to recognize that, the truth itself is in that recognition. The minute you accept this moment as is, truth is there. And as you begin to become aware of or sensitive to what is truth, you're able to, if you will, conjure it up, or more importantly, recognize it when it occurs. And if you become incredibly sensitive, you begin to see that it's there all the time. It's there, embedded in the very stuff of your life, all the time. And the only thing that separates you from it is what you might call noisy mind, or unconsciousness. Because consciousness is simply awareness, looking, paying attention. Not mindful. It's not like, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, because that's not consciousness. Consciousness is watching the thing that's saying, I gotta get it. And you just see yourself quietly aware. And the awareness that you experience is tactile. It actually feels good. You feel it through your whole body. You can call it your chakra system, or you can call it all of the cellular richness of your existence, the atomic nature of your life, the nuclear nature of your life, the whole of your being just starts to feel. I can just use the word wonderful, aligned, alive, present. But you feel truth. You feel awake. You feel aware. It's not a thing that's just happening in your brain. It's happening in your entire nervous system. And you're feeling the world. You are truly feeling life. And that feeling of life, its core element is what you might call, perhaps mistakenly, deliciousness. Delicious. Sexy, warm, embracing, vibrant, thrilling, connected. All of these qualities come out of that feeling. And the more you let go into it, the more you just allow it to be, it becomes more of that. It can actually start to go toward the ecstatic. And you can have ecstatic, but the problem with the ecstatic is that it actually is carrying you into a place where you are appreciating the experience In other words, you are separating from it. To separate from the joy of awareness is to begin to feel ecstatic, and then that what happens with ecstasy is it becomes or more than you can handle, and you lose it. And it becomes more about mind again. The extraordinary thing about presence and truth is what Buddha called middle path. If you take it from the middle and you don't get caught in moving it toward any of the edges or extremes, if you just relax with it and stay at the heart of it, there's no getting caught in measuring it or seeing yourself in it. It just is. It just is. And the isness of truth slowly dissolves the you that feels separate from the truth. So there comes a point where there is no you observing it. There is only it itself. Because every time there is a you observing it, there is this kind of discordant element that's separate and in the measuring mode, in the acknowledging mode. And even though it becomes smaller and smaller, it will still be a kind of irritant. And finally, the truth will just overwhelm that. And there will just be truth itself. This is the journey that all of us are on. Every human being is on this journey into this awakening. But it's so fascinating to watch the world and how it prevents us from getting there, and how it uses old myth and mythic structure to keep us from that space. It feeds us with a kind of intellectualized truth, a truth that's 25 times removed from reality, a truth that is codified by people thousands of years ago, that this is what it is. And as long as you buy into that, you will be separate from it, and you will feel the hunger for it. The growth that occurs in a human being as they approach truth is that all of that knowledge that you've had, all of the world culture knowledge, everything that has been fed into your system from whatever culture you're in, that comes from so many thousands of years ago, all of it has to be chipped away, like a diamond being faceted. You keep losing all of that stuff, and at first you'll feel a little bit of drift. You'll feel, but where is truth? If you let go of this part of it and you let go of that part of it, you'll start to feel really threatened by it. And then what will happen also is people will come into your life and tell you, what are you doing? You can't walk away from this. You can't separate from this dogma or that dogma, because one, it threatens them, and also it will be threatening to you. And so a lot of people who are finding the truth will be swept back into the old one because it's socially acceptable and easy to arrive at and to hold on to, because it's reinforced by everyone around us. The real pursuit of truth is a scary journey, because it's you alone. At first, at least, it looks like you alone. And then you start to find other people who are on that path. You find other people who are participating in the same search. The danger of that is that you just find another person's truth. You'll walk into another group and you'll sit there and they will tell you, well, this is really what it is. And you go, oh, now I finally found it. It's not the old truth, it's this new truth. And of course, that's just as big a problem. And it goes on and on and on until finally you stop listening to anybody else, including me. And you find what is true for you. There are some living souls, I think Nityananda was one, Nisargadatta appears to be one, perhaps Eckhart and some of these other guys who are out there right now, who are just real embodiments of truth. They just express it. They are it. They live it. And to be in the presence of that can be very instructive, because it starts to resonate inside you. It starts to feel right. It starts to be, yes, this is where it is. And then there's the drama of the mind dealing with it. And then there's the drama of letting go of the mind. And then finally there is just you and it. And as you take the you and it as deep as you can go, finally there's no you. There's only it. I think the hardest thing for me as a teacher is dealing with the rigidity of so many people's structure. Because it's so unconscious in most people. It comes with the package. And there's no part of them that's observing it, so that even if I can get in there and start to shift it around a little bit, the culture will come back and put it right back the way it was before. Rudy called that negative psychic tension. The impact of the world around us is so powerful that as you start to loosen the bonds of the world, it will try to pull you back. So the really great spiritual teachers or the great spiritual beings have to work against that. And in truth, it's not that hard. It's not that hard in terms of muscle. You don't really have to fight it. What you have to do is go, but this is true. This is the truth. And be willing to do whatever it takes to feel that. Even if it means, you know, lying to everybody around you. And in a funny way, there are people who grow up in a tradition and they go, I can live in that tradition and feel the truth. You can go into the old patterns. You can go to the church and the temple and the synagogue and all these different places. You can go there with all of the old rigidities in place and yet find in yourself such a truth that it radiates out through that system. So you don't have to make everyone in the world think, oh my God, he's strange, he's left us behind. You just live the truth within the format of the world you're in. You can do that. And I can often find people who are like that. You sit with people and you realize they're there. And they're there without any battle of the world around them. And then there are people who become embattled, who start to have to take their truth and put it out there and fight everyone around them, which is often a prescription for destroying yourself, losing the battle. Better to stay very quiet, very simple, very honest, very gentle, and be true to yourself. There's no reason you have to announce this journey to anybody else. There's no reason you have to put it out there to be attacked. There's no reason you have to fight to have a spiritual life in the worldly sense. The only fight really is within, which is hold on, hold on, hold on, by letting go and letting go and letting go. And in the end, the purity of your effort will pay off. Any questions? Thank you. It's class next week. The week after is Blanche's birthday, and we are taking her away, so there will be no class on that weekend. But there will be class from then on to the end of October. Thank you, guys.